Welcome back to the BrewDeck Podcast. This is part two of our two-part safety episode series. If you missed part one, go back and listen to that one first. We covered what safety means and how to influence a safety culture with Matt Stinchfield, author, safety consultant, and safety subcommittee member for the Brewers Association. And we had a chat with Tiago da Rocha, our United Malt COO, that is Chief Operating Officer. Today in part two, we're going to pick up where we left off with Jeff Irway joining us. He's from La Cumbre Brewing Company in New Mexico.
And if you didn't hear in part one, we are hosting a giveaway for Matt's book, which is titled Brewery Safety, Principles, Processes, and People. If you listen to him talk about his book in part one, you'll know how excited we are to get this book out into the hands of some of our listeners. So to enter, all you have to do is rate and or review the Brew Deck podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Then submit a screenshot of your rating via the link in the episode notes. The giveaway does close October 3rd when we release our upcoming cleaning episode. The full details are in the episode notes as well, so please check them out.
Yeah, and I'll mention it again too. For those of the listeners out there that may be a little bit
squeamish.
Squeamish is the right word for, you know, we're talking realistically and honestly about safety and some accidents that have happened. So for those that are a bit uncomfortable, you can always check out the show notes for timestamps to just skip over certain parts. So just a bit of a disclaimer before we dive right in. Let's do it.
Let's go.
Well, we have the pleasure of being joined by the one and only Jeff Irway over at La Cumbre Brewing Company in Albuquerque. And Jeff, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I'm happy and excited to finally get to chat with you. You know, it's been a while since I've been just perusing around up in your neck of the woods, but I miss you, buddy. How you doing?
I am pretty good. How are you doing, Toby?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, I appreciate your time jumping on. And this is it's a subject that's very important to our organization, and I know very important to many breweries out there. Before we get into the details, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? I know La Cumbre has been around a long time and it's a staple out there in New Mexico and in other areas as well. So yeah, just a quick intro about yourself.
I'm the founder of La Cumbre Brewing Company. I got into the craft beer industry after graduating from the American Brewers Guild. I was hired at Chama River Brewing Company, rest in peace, back in 2007. I worked there for about 3 years as the head brewer. Got a chance to work with a lot of great brewers there. Was trained by a gentleman who ended up being one of the founders of Marble Brewery. After about 3 years in that position, I decided to head off my own, started La Cumbre Brewing Company in 2010. Been doing it ever since. We're distributed in Arizona, Colorado, and throughout New Mexico. Biggest part of our business is really self-distribution to Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And then, we obviously work with outside distributors outside of that. About 60% of what we produce is elevated IPA. That's our company in a nutshell. Got two tap rooms.
Yeah.
That's the award-winning elevated IPA, correct?
Oh, yes. The award-winning elevated IPA.
He's very humble, if you don't know, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely what I've been accused of.
No, you guys have made some really, to be honest with you, some kick-ass beers over the years.
Oh, thanks.
And y'all do a fantastic job. And you know, the times I make it up to that area, I enjoy supporting y'all. So, I appreciate it. The other thing you mentioned too, is for a completely different topic show, is self-distribution of that level, of that magnitude. I won't pick your brain on that, but yeah.
I'll hand you over to my director of sales for that one. He's the one that's led that whole operation.
Yeah, and it seems like it's sticky.
It's 15 people now and just doing it all day long, every day.
My God. Yeah. Well, congrats on the success and continued success. One of the things that specifically brought your name up in my head when we were having some prep meetings on this particular show around safety was was you. And I used to call on you back in the days when I was boots on the ground here. And I remember you sharing a story that was pretty impactful to not only me, and I think you shared it to quite a few other folks, at least as far as the New Mexico Guild is concerned, I believe. But I thought about bringing you on and talking about, you know, that particular story and then how that shaped what you do in-house on the safety side. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, what we do in-house on the safety side now, I'm a firm believer that if OSHA comes a call and, you know, the chances are they're going to find stuff that you're not doing right. And I don't think that they're out there just to play gotcha, but they didn't come to your facility to not find some things that you can improve upon. But you know, it's kind of like any other inspector that comes into my facility. You can worry about that inspector and the fines that they might levy on your organization, or you can worry about how you sleep at night. And I feel like Daniel, my director of brewery operations, Alan, my head brewer, and I are all really focused on finding those things that could potentially wake us up in the middle of the night to horrific, horrific news. I guess I try to approach safety as much from that perspective as anything else, because that means a lot more to me. As far as the specific story that has become certainly not legend, but it's driven a lot of, you know, it's driven eye safety for sure at La Cumbre. It was probably about end of 2012. It was about 10:30 at night, and I was finishing up the brew day, and I was late shift. And I was starting my CIP and, you know, filling the, I think it was, you know, 30 gallons of hot water into the kettle to do the CIP on both the heat exchanger and the kettle. And we were using caustic soda to clean it, obviously. And, I think at this point, I feel like eye safety is kind of like putting your seatbelt on when you get in the car. Luckily, most cars nowadays have those bing, bing, bing. If you try to drive the car without the seatbelt on, it's going to let you know, and it will not stop letting you know until you put the seatbelt on. Well, I wish somehow I could do the same thing with eye safety, because I still catch myself, you know, going onto the brew house floor sometimes without my safety goggles. And I, every time I'm like, stop, turn around, go back to your office, get your goggles. But I didn't have them on, and I was pouring caustic into the kettle, and the hot liquor was coming in at a pretty high rate of speed, faster than I thought it was. And I just did what I would have with any sink. I just kind of, you know, rinsed out the measuring cup that had caustic in it with the water coming into the kettle. That was truly profoundly stupid. And what ended up happening was I got splashed right back in the face with 190 degree water mixed with a very high concentration of sodium hydroxide. I did have an eye wash station, but I had to travel down the stairs from the brew deck and get over to the eye wash station and rinsed it as the very best I could. And, you know, I was like, whatever, it's fine, I'm fine. It hurt a little bit, you know, burned a little bit, tickled, but I rinsed it really well. At least I thought I had. Finished up my brew day and I went home, and my wife saw me, and my eyes were just completely, my one eye was completely bloodshot, to the point where like she barely could tell where the pupil and the whatever. I'm not an eye surgeon, I don't know the different parts of the eye, but she said my eye, she convinced me I absolutely needed to go to the emergency room. And I went to the emergency room, and once I got in, surprisingly enough, they took me right in when they saw my eye, and proceeded for the next 4 hours to flush about 6 gallons of saline solution through my ocular cavity, which drained down into my sinuses, which I don't know if most people have never experienced this, but it basically, they have like a contact lens that has a tube going into it, and they just flood your ocular cavity. And because that drains down into your sinuses, the whole time I felt like I was feeling like I was being waterboarded. Oh, it was truly one of the worst experiences of my life. Oh, it was absolutely horrendous. And the doctor on duty that time came in afterwards and she, you know, asked me how I was feeling. I was like, I'm feeling a lot better. My eye feels great. She's like, yeah, that's because I just doused it in cocaine. I was like, really? Cool.
I'm trying to envision that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so apparently liquid cocaine drops are what they use for really bad eye discomfort. I'm not sure why that was, but at least in 2012, they sent me home with a bottle of
looking at
a saline solution with small amount of cocaine in it.
I don't know if I believe that. I got to look it up.
In any case, you know, and she showed me some images, basically showing me where the chemical burn was. And she said, I can't tell what's chemical and what's heat, but it's a burn. And she said, and you missed your, you know, retina by about 2-3 millimeters. She said, if you'd hit that, you'd be without vision for the rest of your life. I still feel like my left eye, I have, you know, according to my wife and most people I know, most people have been in a car with me, I've got some of the best vision anybody's ever witnessed. But I definitely feel that my left eye ever since then has not been nearly as acute as it had been. But needless to say, the picture of me with the with that contact lens looking thing with a tube going into it, there was a picture of it like 10 different places around my brewery for the next like 5 years, just saying, are you wearing your eye protection? And I would tell that story to just about anybody, just about everybody that was hired on, you know, as soon as I saw them trying to do anything without their eye protection on, I would tell them that story.
Just scare them into it.
Yeah. Well, just tell them like, look, I don't want you to lose your vision. Well, yeah. I don't want that to ever happen to you.
Yeah. And you're very, very lucky.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Super lucky.
Yeah.
How would you say, well, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious, but how would you say this has like shaped the way that you view safety at the brewery since?
Well, I value my own safety way more than I used to. you know, my, yeah. And it also clues you into, you know, you always hear the stories of pre-OSHA brewers, you know, you wouldn't find one in a tank, you'd find two. And you're like, yeah, we don't climb into tanks anymore. I mean, certain brewers do, actually. I was just in the Czech Republic and they still do that. But, you know, and so you always hear the dangers of carbon dioxide exposure. You know, you hear the story about Terry Farrendorf and the hot liquor accident she had back in the 80s. But, you know, when I got into the industry, I feel like my mentors, they did a good job of, you know, telling me to wear gloves when I was handling, when I was, you know, pumping caustic into from a 55 gallon drum into a 1 gallon drum, 1 gallon, you know, container. They did a good job of, you know, instilling in me that you wear boots, that you don't wear shorts. But man, nobody really, I don't feel like anybody really covered as well as they should have, or at least didn't put the fear of God in me about eye protection. And you know, our eyes are pretty damn important. I'd be pretty upset right now. I'd be a lot more upset right now if I had lost vision in my left eye because of that. But yeah, it's something I think about every day. It's something, you know, even non-brewery staff members, when they go back into the brewery, they because of that, they've, you know, there's signs everywhere. Don't come in here without eye protection. And then they for the most part follow it. Yeah. It's sure. You know, at least a couple times a week, I tell somebody, hey, put your goggles on, put your eye protection on. But, you know, there's obviously, you know, at the chemical stations, there's, face shields and, you know, full, you know, arm length gloves and stuff. But, I feel like there still hasn't been enough emphasis on eye protection. And it shocked me, you know, a few months ago, I was, in another country, which will remain nameless, that, you know, where you know, I was on a, I was taking a tour of a bottling line, and they swear to God, they did not have eye protection on. And I was just baffled. Like, here's this huge bottling operation with, you know, dozens of employees running this bottling line, that there's no eye protection anywhere. And I'm like, oh my God.
We've seen it. I'm sure Heather can attest, but in our, you know, 10 plus years of just roaming around in breweries, I've seen some very, very large reputable brewers that you take people back there. They're not wearing eye protection. They're wearing shorts. Some of them wearing flip flops, and it's, you know, it's crazy. But yeah, the eye protection, you're absolutely right, is a big thing, not just because you had the experience there, but it's something that I think a lot of people overlook. You know, it's simple as like mowing the grass, right? I mean, I've been, you know, hit by rocks, you know, up in the face area that got really close to my eye. And I think, whoa, if that, you know, was 1 inch to the left, I'd, you know, probably have a bad eye issue. Right.
So, I was trying to take apart a faucet the other day, and my safety goggles were fogged up, and I just put them up on my forehead while I, you know, put this faucet in the vice grips, and I took some channel locks to kind of pry the bonnet out, and sure as shit, as soon as I took my safety goggles out. And this happened just a month ago, you know, and I got smacked right up beside my temple because I, you know, it just, you know, I pried it and all of a sudden it shot loose and wham, right into my temple. And I sat there thinking to myself, I can make all the excuses I want in the world. I absolutely deserve that. That was really stupid. And if I had been wearing my goggles, first of all, it probably would have protected my temple a little bit. Second of all, if that had been just a little bit further to the right, you know, I would be in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is kind of a random one, but do you think you've always kind of looked out for, you said about like you taking your personal safety a bit more serious. Do you think you would have looked at somebody else not wearing their goggles and been like, what are you doing? And then looked at yourself and just not really thought about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very easy to, you know, especially because as the owner, I'm not covered under workers' compensation. I'm also not covered under OSHA. OSHA can, you know, fine me for everything else that everybody else is doing, and OSHA and my workers' compensation can, you know, get at my case about everything everybody else is doing. But if I wanted to, you know, wear tidy whities on my scissor lift without a harness and go up there, in flip flops and clean a tank without any eye protection on, there's really nothing anybody else can do about it. It's just that, I value my safety more than that nowadays. But I still to this day have to constantly remind myself, you know, don't step on the floor without goggles on. Don't step onto the floor without closed-toed shoes and stuff. Not that I never wear flip flops when I work, obviously, but. There's all sorts of things I have to constantly remind myself of. And, you know, it's very easy to look around your brewery and pick apart what other people are doing. Cause you know, as the supervisor, that's kind of what you should do, what you've trained yourself to do, but it's a lot harder when it's yourself.
Yeah. Tidy whities on a scissor lift.
There you go.
I want to say, have you ever done that?
No.
Just be serious.
No.
Okay.
No. I have seen a brewer with tidy whities with nothing but tidy whities on in a brewery. But in their defense, it was 125 degrees in that brewery.
But I was going to say to our listeners, these are not like recommendations.
They were wearing knee length rubber boots as well.
Still doesn't make it right. Visually, right? No.
Visually or safety wise, no. Probably right, not exactly. The best way.
Well, yeah, it's a story. It's one of those that I'm sure just, you know, you paid attention to safety before, but you know, after this, it's probably, as you mentioned, it's more focus and, you know, thinking about it more often than you probably would have. But as far as La Cumbre, I'm assuming since then things have kind of evolved and more emphasis has been placed. You mentioned on eyewear, but how do you how do you ensure, you mentioned just other protocols. Do you have, you know, safety, you know, guidelines posted? Is you just have a picture of your cocaine eye sitting everywhere? So how do you make sure that your staff is completely aware of, you know, all hazards and making sure they're keeping themselves safe so they can go home at night?
Yeah. I mean, we do, you know, we have a preventative maintenance contract with our forklift, the company we purchased our forklifts from, and that includes you know, yearly trainings for everybody on forklift safety. We're pretty intense about it, just because, you know, obviously the number of times that somebody's, you know, not operated a forklift in a safe manner, and we've lost a pallet of beer, lost pallets of cans and such. And but in addition to that, you know, what's happened at a few commercial breweries in the last, in the last 10 years is not lost on us. I think, you know, the people that start talking, you know, and Matt will tell you everything that you want to know about the kind of fines that OSHA can levy upon you. That is the last worry in my mind about safety. I'm always scared to death about, and, you know, hearing that somebody really maimed themselves or worse, in my facility. So, you know, scissor lift, obviously, we don't get up on a scissor lift at all without harnessing in. You don't leave the scissor lift until, you know, onto the tank, until you're harnessed onto the tank. We have CO2 alarms on every cold room with any kind of CO2 service to them. So obviously any draft cold rooms at either one of our tap rooms or the conditioning tanks in our brewery, where there's, you know, a lot of CO2 running. We got CO2 alarms around the canning line. I'm a big one for CO2 alarms because I've got another pretty petrifying story about my first job and PVRV going off all night and going into the room.
Oh, no.
Almost, you know, blacking out. So we
that happened to a friend of mine in their brewery as well, and they were alone. Yeah, and good thing, like, he kind of caught what was going on with himself and, like, got himself outside and did call 911, and he ended up having to spend a lot of time in the hospital.
Oh, it's scary.
Yeah, it's so
I didn't
scary.
Have to spend any time in the hospital, but I collapsed. And, it scared the crap out of me.
See, you've been learning the hard way along the way.
Yeah. I've learned the hard way a bunch. But like I said, you know, any one of us that thinks like we're gonna get through an OSHA inspection unscathed, you know, without any warnings, fines, or whatever, you know, that to me is completely secondary to the safety of everybody on staff. I desperately want to make sure that people go home at night, and then they, you know, that their loved ones, you know, don't wake up to find out the worst.
Absolutely. It's, and we've been talking a lot on prepping for this episode specifically. It's a lot of, it's about culture, right? It's about, you know, it starts at the top, and, you know, you support each other and, you know, look out for each other. And I'm going to get to that in a second, but I did want to also mention, we talked a lot about brewery safety, but there's also some concerns and I think front of house, you know, the service staff that's serving over the bar has got to be very cognizant of safety as well. And the first thing I think of is just, you know, over serving patrons, number one, right? There's glass, there's a lot of different, you know, things that, can happen in the front of the house. So what about at your tap room and in your tap rooms, I should say, Jeff, like, you know, it's something that, your staff and crew has to always be on the lookout for, right? I mean, an accident for any reason can happen while, you know, people are sitting around enjoying a beer.
Yeah. I mean, I think our single biggest workers' compensation claim was, you know, fairly early on, an employee that, you know, dropped a glass and slit his hand open pretty bad. I want to say he had 12 stitches. Is he maimed for life? No, he's fine. He still works for me. And you know, could we have done something to stop that? Probably not. That one was probably unavoidable. But you know, obviously boxing up any broken glass, not putting it into a plastic bag or a container, you know, without being bought, you know, in a cardboard box. I think it's pretty standardized across the industry. Hopefully it is. People know to do that. As far as, you know, service of customers, the state of New Mexico has made it abundantly clear to bar owners time and time again that the Supreme Court will always side against the bar owners when someone gets overserved. They'll almost never hold that person civilly liable. So the fact is that if, you know, despite beyond the public shaming, the knowledge that you might have contributed to somebody, you know, injuring or killing, you know, another person out on the road, we just, you know, I think I just decided early on I didn't really want to expose my servers to really trying to have to address it all that much. And I wanted to make sure that the, you know, the 82-year-old guy that came into my tap room every afternoon at 3 o'clock to have a couple beers still felt comfortable coming in there. I wanted to make sure my wife felt comfortable bringing our kids in. So we just had a hard and fast, like, 3-drink limit from the very beginning. And I know tons of people see that and they're like, why in the hell do you have that rule? Do you not like money? I get it. No, I like money, I promise. But, you know, it kind of sets the tone for the tap room not being a place to get all schwasty. You know, I try to have that tone set for, you know, also the professionalism of my staff when they go and enjoy a pint in our tap room, that they themselves have to hold themselves to account like that too. But, you know, I wanted to set the tone early on. That's just not the place to get drunk. And there are plenty of bars around town that'll let you get drunk. Mine's not one of them. But beyond that, you know, my tap room staff at the brewery are, you know, going into the brewery on a daily basis to, you know, do all sorts of things. That's where a mop sink is. So I pass out a quick, you know, easy to read sheet on the different chemicals that they might find themselves exposed to. Not anything like an MSDS sheet that, you know, 99.9% of people are never going to read, but something that is, you know, a page that lists all the different chemicals, what they smell like, what they look like, what they feel like, what you need to do if you truly are exposed to them.
Yeah, it's actually in English, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because MSDS, yeah, like, hell, I can't understand what half of those say anyway. So you're right. Like, something that the normal person can understand, like, this is how it can hurt you. This is how it can affect you. Yeah, I like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And obviously, you know, let them know about the CO2 alarms. And there's shut off valves outside the outside each cold room to turn off the supply of CO2 in case those alarms are going off, and they know to open the door and let it vent until the alarm shuts off. So yeah, I mean, you're right. There's absolutely dangers for front of house staff as well. And then obviously, you know, we run our solid salt distribution, which means we're cleaning draft lines every day. You know, it's truly one of the, you know, from an eye safety standpoint, probably one of the more dangerous jobs you can do.
Sure.
You know, have to fully train those guys and gals on, you know, wearing a, you know, proper vinyl gloves while they're working. And you know, we're often doing, you know, caustic, and then, you know, followed by an acid cycle, followed by PAA. So yeah, there's all sorts of chemicals they got to be trained on.
Yeah, you think about I didn't even think about it. You got people in vans or trucks, you know, distributing product, and you talk about safety hazards everywhere out on the road. No.
Have you ever seen what peroxyacetic acid will do to the floor of a van?
I have not.
It'll eat right through it.
Oh, geez.
one of our old vans literally had a hole growing right through to the ground. Oh, gosh. Because of a spilled PAA bottle. I mean, on top of that, he had to literally clear out of the thing because anybody who's ever spilled PAA knows exactly what happens. It fills the room with just a really noxious gas. But yeah, it was that was entertaining, I guess, if not completely petrifying. What it did to raw metal.
Yeah. Well, going back to in front of the house and Heather, you and I don't think we talked about it in our prep, but I've been into breweries and sat at the tap room where you order like a double IPA, I don't know, like a 8.5-9%, mm-hmm. and they serve it in a pint glass or some giant glass, right?
And, but yeah, that's not responsible. Sorry.
No, I think it's a mistake. Like some restaurants, and hopefully most breweries are smart enough to think about, hey, if we're serving, you know, high ABV stuff, we're not going to put it in a 16-ounce glass because mm-hmm. that can quickly. In part of that, I think falls on the responsibility of the brewer as well, right? Like, if you have someone that's not completely up to speed as far as a beer drinker lover, right, can come in like, oh, this is good. Some beers are so well made, and Jeff's, you know, his crew is probably one of them too. You go in there and like, it's not cloyingly like alcoholic, right? So you know, you could pound a 16-ounce, you know, 9.5 and not even know it. So something else to think about.
Yeah, so Jeff, your barley wine should not be served in the same size of glass as your Pilsner. Shouldn't be a thing.
I know. So yeah, we talked a little bit about earlier about culture. And for our listeners out there, and it, you know, some of them may, for lack of a better term, be kind of on the lower end of the totem pole. But do you have any tips out there for those people who don't feel safe in their brewery, don't feel like they have a voice? You know, any words of wisdom or something that you would tell them about safety and when you're concerned to raise your hand and say something about it?
Yeah, you know, I think olden day, you know, back in the dark ages of brewing, I think a lot of owners kind of looked the other way / condoned, and a lot of brewers, director of brewery operations / brewmaster / head brewers, tolerated, condoned, encouraged drinking on the job. And I think, you know, one of the things that I feel like has seriously improved in the last 15 years is that has become more and more unacceptable behavior. And I think it should be considered such because, I think, you know, if we're truly professionals, we need to act professional, and drinking on the job is just not something that professionals do. And I think part of company culture and setting that tone for not only the people that you're supervising, but also the people that are higher up is showing that you do take your job seriously and you are professional and that they need to be too. And I'd say like one of the biggest steps forward that's happened probably in my industry in the last 15 years is just that kind of behavior has become quite a bit more verboten. And I'm glad to see it. And I used to go into very large breweries and see people on the packaging lines, which were back then all bottling lines, you know, some of the most dangerous pieces of equipment that you can imagine. And they were drinking while they were packaging. And I was just like, oh my God, this is shocking. But, you know, to directly, speak to your question, I think, you know, if you feel like your supervisor doesn't value your safety, then you need to leave. But I think about it, you know, to the idea of an OSHA fine or something like that, everybody, you know, is, you know, all nervous that, you know, they'll come in and get OSHA will come in and you'll get $50,000, $60,000, whatever, $1,000 fines. Those, you know, when you know, just to use the keg accident that happened at Red Hook, the Plastic Kegs America accident that happened at Red Hook a bunch of years back. Let me tell you, the OSHA inspection that happened afterwards and the fines that were levied were an infinitesimally small pittance compared to what happened with the civil lawsuits having to do with that accident. And that goes for every safety accident there is. If you can't, you know, on the moral ground say that it's the best thing for your business, the best thing for your company, the best thing for your employees to have a safe company culture and to make safety part of your company culture, that, you know, how about the health and stability and sustainability of your business? Because if somebody dies on your property or somebody is truly maimed on your property, I mean, if that happened to me, 52 employees would be out of a job and I'd probably be losing my house. So, you know, if the whole, you know, moral argument doesn't work all that well for you, how about the sustainability of your business? Business owners need to understand that, and if they don't understand it well, they need to speak to an attorney, and the attorney will help them understand it well, what kind of liabilities are on us to make sure that we have safe workplaces for both our customers and our employees.
I'm clapping over here. I'm raising the hands. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Very, very, very honest and something that people need to hear for sure. Yeah. So we talked about eyewear, right? And you call them goggles, safety glasses. We mentioned, long pants. Is there any other items that you can think of that are must haves that don't typically come to mind?
I don't require brewers wear rubber boots. And I'm talking about, you know, the kinds that are steel toed and, you know, full wrap, rubber boots. I wear them myself. I like them. I like the ones that go right up my leg, right up my calf. You know, whether they be from Honeywell or Darn Tough, what's the other company? I'm forgetting, but, let me see. I got a pair here. Extra Tough. That's one. You know, to me, those boots are awesome as from a safety standpoint. And honestly, they're more comfortable than they look. But that being said, I do absolutely require waterproof boots that are ASTM and you know, electric shock rated. We do give our brewers a budget, you know, a stipend for buying boots.
That's a great idea.
The boots have to work. The boots have to be, you know, full coverage. I saw a guy a couple months ago, whose boots were completely tattered and falling apart. I was like, what size are you? And, you know, a couple days later, here you go. I don't feel comfortable having those, rubber gloves everywhere. You know, really? You know, elbow length rubber gloves, as many of them as you can put everywhere so that people never have any excuse for not wearing them. When you're working, you know, with something that you need fine motor skills for, you know, we've just got vinyl gloves everywhere. Are vinyl gloves that great of a, you know, PPE? No, but they're absolutely better than bare hands. So we have that, you know, we've got our, you know, and honestly, we use lighter chemicals when we can. We've got an ultrasonic bath that, you know, obviously a lot of smaller brewers aren't going to be able to afford to do an ultrasonic bath, but, and that is, you know, you can get away with a lot less, chemical usage when you've got an ultrasonic bath. And then we've just got COP stations where, you know, there's big 55-gallon drums that have been cut, you know, and have fittings on them to easily drain them and stuff. And those have gloves and, you know, right, you know, very, in the very close vicinity. And there's, you know, tongs to pull things out. I like fryer baskets, especially if you can find them in stainless steel. Fryer baskets are really great for getting parts out of chemicals without you know, touching anything yourself.
Literally the handheld basket scoops you use for frying food.
Yeah. Huh. Oh yeah. Okay. Fryer baskets for small parts.
Yeah.
Small parts. You got it. That's what we soak our clamps and gaskets with.
It's a good idea.
Just put them inside there. But, I'm seeing a lot more of the chemical showers. We've got a chemical shower at our brewery, and you know, it's kind of a hard ask to tell a small brew pub to put in a chemical shower, but I'd encourage them to do so, even though, you know, it probably took me till 2014 until we put ours in, and we were probably an 8,000 barrel a year brewery at that point. You know, I feel like chemical showers are not that expensive. You've already got all the plumbing you need to put it in. Just put it in. It's not that hard. And obviously, I wash stations as well.
So like we said, you've obviously really learned the hard way when it comes to safety in your brew house. Do you have any tips for like kind of where to start for anybody that's opening a brewery and really wants to start strong with their safety program?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the BA's, you know, you mentioned we've had Matt Stitchfield on the program. The Brewers Association has an enormous amount of stuff that, you know, I myself haven't taken. And I sit on one of their subcommittees and I have not taken full advantage of the of all the education that they have on their website. But the Matt has done, I think, as well as anybody possibly could have to put together some really great educational tracks all about safety. If you haven't been at the Craft Brewers Conference before, the Craft Brewers Conference has an entire program, just, you know, like a track dedicated to safety. And Matt is always presenting on that. And they very often have former OSHA inspectors coming in and presenting on that. And so I think those are the two things that I would absolutely say that are must you know, look at, must go to if you possibly can, are those two resources.
Yeah, and I think if your local guild hasn't spent a whole lot of time on safety, and this is for the listeners, it is certainly something that I would bring up as a topic on a future meeting, right? And we talked about Matt. There's individuals out there, there's vendors that Jeff and really all of us in the industry deal with that know a lot about safety and have a lot of experience in safety and would be probably more than happy to come out and speak to your local guilds as well about the importance and, you know, ins and outs and how to get started and continue with safety.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the prices of some of this safety equipment has come down astronomically. Now there are certain things, especially some of the ergonomic, you know, safety mechanisms, like, you know, just the keg robots that are still pretty darn expensive. But, you know, like, it's never been cheaper to go on to McMaster Car and pick yourself up 50, you know, set of 50 safety glasses. It's never been cheaper to go on there and pick up, you know, arm length chemical gloves or, you know, a chemical apron in case, you know, you really need it. Things like, you know, harnesses for your scissor lifts. You know, the free stuff that if you've got a forklift, it's got a seatbelt. I can't tell you how many brewers I've seen in the last, you know, 5 years that are driving around on a forklift without a seatbelt on. And you know, it's one of the first things you learn in the OSHA class is the dangers of riding around on a forklift without a seatbelt. And it's not that it's going to save you in case of an accident. It's going to save your butt from jumping out,
like rolling on it. Yeah.
That's how the vast majority of forklift operators, you know, if they have an accident that, or they get maimed, they die. That's how they die, is the crossbars coming and crushing them. They tried to, because the forklift started to tip and they tried to jump out. Well, if you got a seatbelt on, you're probably not going to be able to jump out. And, you know, that's kind of why they're there.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, one of the things that Matt mentioned what pretty much five bullet points when it comes to the safety culture. And one of them was effective communication. And I think in a broader kind of look at it or spectrum, we're doing that here, right? With Jeff is really getting, you know, communicating about the subject, doing it with people that have had experience firsthand, and really utilizing forums like the podcast here and then, you know, what we do in the industry to promote, and as a whole, as an industry, and as you know, as we all work as a team to make sure that everybody can go home safe. So I do appreciate Jeff, you coming on and giving a little bit of background on your story and what you guys and girls are doing at La Cumbre. So I know you're busy and appreciate you spending the time of coming out. And for those listeners who haven't been out to the Albuquerque area, make a trip, go in and see the folks at La Cumbre. They've got their brewery out of Girard, and then their tap room, which I haven't been to, Jeff, because it's been that long I haven't been out there, over off of Coors Boulevard. So I need to come see you.
Absolutely. Look forward to it, Toby. Thanks for having me on.
Great big thank you to Jeff. And thanks again to Matt and Tiago from part one. And don't forget to enter our giveaway to win Matt's brewery safety book before it closes on October 3rd. And again, the full details are in the episode description to enter.
Yep. And next week, we'll return to our regularly scheduled program with an episode devoted to cleaning and chemicals. So don't want to miss it. Make sure, if you're not already, please subscribe to the BrewDeck podcast so you'll never miss one of our awesome episodes. Right?
Right. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.